An organization is a living organism, so your analogy is very apt and very correct. There are a lot of antibodies. There is a lot of momentum against it. Like I said before, change is hard. Change is not natural. And so the organism will naturally try to work against any kind of changes, any kind of new ideas, especially large organizations.
Welcome to the Loss and Transformation podcast series dedicated to the complex world of digital transformation. We feature guests from large corporations, startups, consultancies, and more to shed light on the success factors around innovation, transformation, and adjacent topics. We share firsthand insights and inspiration from experts for all the entrepreneurs, and anyone curious about digital transformation. Thomas Jakob leads Bosch.io in Asia Pacific, having an extensive background in leading companies into digital technologies and business models. We wanted to learn from him how Bosch.io works with IoT solutions and transforms businesses. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Thomas. Welcome to Loss and Transformation. We're really glad to have you, and you as the regional president of Bosch.io in Asia Pacific know quite a lot about transforming businesses. And we're curious to get to know more about Bosch.io today. So to start off, could you explain what is the big idea behind it?
Good morning, Christine. Very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation. It's great to actually join you guys for the podcast. And obviously, Bosch is a fairly large industrial conglomerate. You might know us from consumer devices like washing machines, fridges, as well as power tools. But we are obviously doing a lot of stuff in the automotive industry, so in nearly every car in the world. There's some parts from Bosch in there, whether software or hardware. We're doing a lot of industrial devices. We're doing a lot of stuff which goes into buildings and so on. And Bosch.io, which was recently renamed, it was called Bosch Software Innovations until the end of last year. And now with a move more and more to digital kind of solutions and services, we thought it's appropriate to rename that to Bosch.io. But in any case, we started on that journey quite a long time ago because we thought it's really important for Bosch to understand, as a manufacturer of things, how the Internet of Things is going to change our devices, because that is what we are really good in, bringing devices out there on a very large scale. We also thought it would change the way how we manufacture ultimately. So things like Industry 4.0, industrial connectivity would change the way how our things are being put together. And thirdly, and probably most importantly, it was about change in business models also. So in the past, we sold devices, they went into cars, they went into homes, etc. And we were quite happy never to hear from these devices again because it meant that they're working well. Obviously, in the new world, this is not a good thing, right? You're losing contact with your customers. You cannot do anything about these devices while they're out there. And so IoT, we thought, brings us the opportunity to also look at the life cycle of our products in a much different way. So that is how Bosch.io, or Bosch Software Innovations at the time, came about, and that was already in 2008, so more than 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What was the purpose of the journey, in your opinion, of Bosch.io?
Well, it was probably threefold. So on one side, we wanted to understand the technology, and that's, for an industrial conglomerate, for a technology company, of course, a very natural impulse to say, I want to understand this in depth. Of our 400,000 people, a large majority are engineers. So they love that technology, actually, right? So we said, listen, let's understand what this means, actually, in terms of the underlying technology. So that was one aspect. The second aspect was, of course, develop skills, develop capabilities, to develop approaches, methodologies, etc., to go about this new world, this VUCA world, I think it's very often called, right? Volatile, uncertain, complex, and so on. And so this was a second very important aspect. And as I mentioned lastly, also to understand how services will impact the way how we do business. So instead of selling a device, providing services either on top of the device or instead of selling the device. So things like SaaS services, selling software or solutions as a service, has become very, very important over the last decade. And so that was part of the intention also. And with all of that, to start developing a momentum within the company, which then leads as an outcome to digital transformation, which is obviously a very long-term journey. And even after 11 years now, I think we are just, or 12 years by now nearly, I think we're just at the beginning of that. And I think we have made a lot of progress in this regard. We have created a lot of pockets, initiatives, momentum across the company, but it is a journey which will probably take us the better part of the next 10 to 20 years still.
Yeah. Interesting. And what are some of the products you're working on? Could you state some examples?
Well, the way how we started was to look at obviously industries and segments which are very close to the heart of Bosch. And that's something which I would recommend also to anybody looking at digital solutions, IoT, AI, whatever it might be. There's, of course, a lot of interest in these kind of technologies and in maybe seeing how they can apply on a grand scale, digital strategies for companies, overarching kind of concepts, etc. But what we found over the years is very important is to start with concrete problem statements. So not start with a grand vision necessarily. Yes, that is good to also have a big picture, like we said, why we wanted to do this in the first place. But then very quickly go down and say, okay, where do we have concrete issues? Where do we have concrete bottlenecks, for example, in our plants? Where do we have concrete issues, let's say, on the automotive side, which we can solve through using IoT, AI, whatever it might be? And so that is why we started very close to our heart. We looked at the automotive side, the transportation side. We looked at manufacturing. We looked at smart home also because of certain historical reasons. And we start to develop use cases there. So, for example, in our factories, we developed probably by now more than 250, 300 use cases. Some worked, others didn't. Also an important learning as part of that to realize what doesn't work. But a lot of them did work, and we step by step then took out these kind of bottlenecks in our plants. We are now developing very holistic solutions for end-to-end processes and planning and increase in OEE or productivity in plants by doing very, very comprehensive production planning using IoT, connectivity on the shop floor, knowing exactly what kind of demand there is, what kind of supply we have, what kind of machinery we have on the shop floor, in which status, which people and skills we have on the shop floor, and trying to combine that all into a very dynamic mapping and then be able to control the output very exactly. And so this was very critical, actually, to start with very concrete, even small problem statements, try to solve them, try to prove that it works, try to prove that it has a benefit, and then build on that gradually rather than going for a big bang approach, so to say, where you're trying to have a grand strategy, roll it out across the company. And very often that doesn't deliver the results, so people get very disenchanted very quickly. And that's a real risk which we should avoid. And I think that is something where an industrial company like Bosch is quite good in, to take it step by step, gradually, maybe not as fast as others, but doing it very consistently and therewith also getting the results ultimately.
What are some of the success factors, you would say, in deploying these IoT solutions?
Well, coming back to what I said before, so have a concrete problem, actually. Don't try to revolutionize something just for the sake of using digital in one way or the other, whatever that means. Have a concrete problem statement. Make it as specific as possible. It doesn't have to be big, but it has to be very concrete. And it has to be solvable by technology. There are certain topics which we also found out which don't lend themselves to being solved by digital because there may be issues which lie in the skill of people, actually, or which lie in other areas, actually, where IoT doesn't necessarily make an improvement. And then put a team, we call them very often purpose teams, together of experts which have a good rounded understanding of that problem area, so to say, and let them have the responsibility to decide how they want to approach this and provide them the right technologies, of course. So that is why we developed our own set of technologies, what we call the Bosch IoT Suite, our own IoT technology platform, which then allows us with kind of Lego blocks to put together a solution relatively quickly and easily. And that was very important. Part of that was also that we changed our mindset in an engineering company, specifically in a company which comes from the automotive sector. You can imagine that the brakes in a car, for example, they need to work under any circumstances. And you have probably heard that cars are being tested for millions and millions and millions of miles before certain parts or the car itself goes onto the road. They have very, very extensive testing, certification, safety cycles, etc., because it's mission critical that all these parts do work at 200 miles per hour on a highway, actually, for example, right? You cannot meddle with it. It has to work always. And so that mindset was very prevalent within Bosch, of course, right? Because people were trained over more than 100 years to actually work to the highest standards possible and to ensure that quality under any circumstances. So for them, something like an agile development methodology is completely alien, goes against the grain, actually, right? And so that's something which we had to learn also. And it took us quite a while to understand how we can apply this in our context and how we can also work with that concept of MVPs, right? Minimum viable products. That doesn't exist. You cannot put half a brake out there, right? Which works most of the time and which doesn't have all the functionality. That is not possible, right? It is possible with IoT solutions where you can start with a small core and then you build on it step by step, right? And we are now using that more and more also in the more traditional industrial areas. But it is, of course, a big cultural change. And that's probably the most important part. Technologies can be controlled. There is a way how to go about technologies. This is something which we have done, as I said, in for more than 100 years. That's okay. Our engineers are very good actually in what they're doing. But to change the mindset, how you go about certain things, to accept that not everything has to be perfect at the beginning for an MVP, for a POC, a proof of concept, for example, right? This is something which requires a large amount of change. And as we all know, we as humans are not necessarily great with change. We love for things to stay the way as they are. And until this percolates through a company with 400,000 people, a small city, obviously this takes some time.
True. And what are potential mistakes or pitfalls that companies need to avoid when talking about these IoT solutions?
Well, don't look at the technology, right? The technology is there and most of it is these days quite well doable. People are concerned about security, for example. Yes, that is a very important point. IoT provides more entry points potentially for people to get in there if they want to. So there were examples, right, where people were hacking into fridges and all kinds of stuff. So that is, of course, something which is an issue, but there is technology available to control this, actually, right? So I'm not too worried normally about the technology. What we are very worried about is having a clear objective, having a clear understanding of how to apply this, what are we trying to solve, having a clear understanding also, and that is where we spend most of the time probably, what is the business model behind it? How do you actually sell, provide a certain IoT solutions to the world? And if I would make one recommendation for people out there who are interested in developing digital solutions is to spend a lot more time upfront. Don't start to play around with the technology too early. Think through what you want to achieve, how you want to achieve that, and in which way are you going to roll this out. If you have that very clear, if you have figured that out, then the rest is relatively easy. Now, of course, a lot of things can still go wrong then. We had clear ideas sometimes. We thought it would work. It didn't in the end. Fair enough. That's okay, right? Then we need to shut it down as quickly as we can when we see it doesn't work. But the upfront concept is more important than actually looking at the technology itself, which obviously doesn't come natural. As I'm an engineer myself, right? We like to dabble in all of that kind of stuff. We like to hack something together and so on. Great stuff. But we found that is mostly where the issue really is. It's in the upfront concept rather than the implementation itself.
Interesting. So you were saying that it's important to have a clear understanding of how you provide the IoT solutions to the world. And what would you say are the industries that are best suited to actually adopt IoT technologies?
Well, as I mentioned, Bosch is an industrial conglomerate. So we are active in quite a number of fields or industry sectors. So when we started off with some POC in quite a number of different areas. We found very quickly that, first of all, manufacturing lends itself very well to this idea of IoT and connectivity. A lot of machinery on the shop floor was so far not connected together. Yes, they potentially had digital interfaces, for example, on the machine level, but these were isolated data pools, actually isolated islands, actually, of data. And so Industry 4.0 is probably the area where we found the most immediate success in terms of being able to improve the OEE, that means the productivity in the plant, for example. You can see some very immediate kind of results by removing, as I mentioned, certain bottlenecks, for example, right? By providing more visibility into the process, being able to react to that, being able to adjust that. So that's one area. The other area, which is by now pretty standard business, actually, is in the automotive area. More or less every high-end car these days is a connected vehicle. Reason being that the mechanical, electromechanical, electronic content in the car is very prevalent, of course, already. But these days, most of the functionality in the car is actually driven by software. Normally, software residing in the vehicle itself these days still. But more and more, we are seeing functionality being provided from the outside also. So a modern vehicle contains 1, 2, 3 million lines of code. And this needs to be kept updated on a regular basis. So processes, procedures like firmware updates over the air, as I said, providing additional information into the multimedia system, into the car, the navigation system, and so on, is now state of the art. And this is something, obviously, which is a very important part of our business. So we did actually take a step beginning of 2018 to spin off these areas, so specifically Industry 4.0, which we incubated within Bosch Software Innovation as a discipline, into a separate business unit for Bosch called Bosch Connected Industry. At the same time, we also spun off our automotive-focused activities into a new business unit called Connected Mobility Services. And so these are now acting on their own, acting separately, using IoT and connected technologies to improve the way how automotive or industrial assets are being run. A little bit earlier, we already spun off another entity called Smart Home. And also that is a separate area where we see a lot of application of IoT technology, obviously. I'm not sure whether you're using some smart home technology at home. We have by now about 5 million smart homes connected. We have our own product out there. And we believe this has a lot of upside in the future, even that it is probably an area which is still lagging a little bit behind in terms of the results which we all had hoped for. We thought at the time, by now in 2020, most of our homes would be now smart connected homes. But I think we are still just at the beginning of that revolution.
Yeah. So we can already see some like very successful implementations of these IoT solutions. And can you share also some unsuccessful cases to learn from or any experiments that failed along the road?
Sure, of course. As I said, we had at the time when we spun it off, we had about 180 use cases running in our factories. But we probably had at least 250 or 300 implemented, right? So there was a significant portion which ultimately did not work because either the technology was not ready at the time, the sensors were maybe not ready at the time. So certain things, certain operations require very specific sensory capabilities. They have very fastly advanced over the last couple of years, specifically with MEMS sensors, micromechanical sensors. which we are producing about 4 million every day. They came from the automotive area, but these were at the time maybe not completely at the point where we could do the things which you can do nowadays. We also had other ventures, for example, in the agricultural area, which did not work out as well as we wanted to, not necessarily to do with technology, but also with the mindset of the people using it, right? So very often you need to rely on people applying and actively using these technologies. If people simply say, listen, I have done my business for 50 years in this way, and I'm not quite ready to change that, there's very little we can do apart of trying to prove the business case. And so that's, for example, an issue still in the agricultural area, not so much on the industrial side, but individual farmers, they have done their business in a certain way for a long time. And so there needs to be a generational change, for example, also, right? We also had certain ventures in the healthcare sector, which also at the time were probably too early. We are now seeing that this is starting to happen, but the time needs to be ready also for it. You need to also have the willingness to pay for certain services. And if people say, well, listen, this is interesting, this looks attractive, but are ultimately not willing to pay for it, then there's no business case, right? Then it's interesting technology again. But that was the experience to some extent with healthcare. You can, since many years, monitor what people are doing at home. You can potentially improve lives, actually, of people. You can detect whether somebody falls down. But it needs somebody actually to say, listen, this is something I think is really valuable. And that at the time didn't exist. So we had ventures in the UK, in the US at the time, which had fantastic services, but there was just no market for it, right? And that is why the business model strategizing in the beginning is very important. Understand your audience before you then apply technology and solve a problem, which maybe is not worthwhile to solve at that point in time.
Yeah. Definitely makes sense. And so you're basically overseeing the whole processes. What have you learned along the way with the whole Bosch IO?
Well, I think what was the hardest to accept for an organization like Bosch was probably that certain things don't work and that we have to recognize that also, that we have to experiment. And in a classical engineering organization, you don't experiment. You set yourself a goal, actually, and you try to find a way to solve this. And we went about, for example, injection system for engines, right? They were developed over decades until they were practical, until they really went into mass market application. So we went at it for a long, long time. We developed very sophisticated technologies, manufacturing approaches, etc., to make that work. And that is why we were able to capitalize on that so well. That doesn't work in an era where, as I said, a VUCA world, where the speed of development has increased so much. We don't have decades to develop certain things now anymore. Product life cycles have changed from a decade to 7 years to 5 years. And in certain areas, like in software, for example, where we are active, we are putting things out there continuously, right? It's not anymore that we are waiting for the next release or so. It's a continuous development approach where we have in a DevOps mode functionalities we are putting out there more or less on a daily basis, right? And so obviously in that environment, the way how you go about it is very different, but also you need to accept that certain things don't work out, as I said before, and you need to accept that. Accept that experimentation is part of it, especially in new areas where maybe it's not quite clear yet how that applies or not applies. But if you want to have a competitive advantage, you cannot wait until it's proven, because then you are not an innovator anymore, right? So you need to put yourself out there in front of it. And that means by definition, you will probably fail in some areas and you have to accept that also. And that's hard. That's not something which we as an organization were very good in necessarily. And I think that's true for many companies, right? This is not something which is part and parcel of the corporate fabric in many companies, right? And that is also why we're working very closely with startups, for example, to fill our innovation funnel and also to accelerate our speed of driving new ideas there.
Mm-hmm. is that also part of how you look at the success of, like, in the position you're in, that you're able to transform the people's mindset within the organization?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, this was definitely part of the intention, right? Mm-hmm. Driving the digital transformation of Bosch, ultimately being the spearhead for that digital transformation, not necessarily being able to do all of it, but developing the tools, developing the skills, developing the methodologies, and developing also the momentum across the company. And I think that is what is very important. I always like to compare an organization like Bosch with a large engine, right, in a way. And a large engine with a lot of displacement, a large volume motor, takes quite a bit of effort and force to get started, right? You need a big effort at the beginning to get it moving, to get it rolling. But if it's then picking up the momentum, if it's starting to churn, if it's starting to turn, it's very hard to stop it. It carries forward for a very long time. And this is what we are trying to create. And that is where we all using all these small impulses through lots of POCs, lots of different potentially small initiatives to step by step build that momentum and to ultimately crank up that engine so that it starts to run on its own with very little effort and carries forward. And I think that is what we have achieved now in Bosch, very much driven from the top also in Bosch. So our CEO, Mr. Denner, was the biggest proponent of that change. And we now actually, with that support, now having that momentum across the company, we have now thousands of people across Bosch who are developing IoT type of solutions, AI solutions, and are using that in more or less every area of our business. And so it's percolating now quite naturally through the company. We have enough critical mass that it now carries forward, that it doesn't need necessarily that kind of continuous push anymore. People have internalized the ideas, the concept. We have trained a lot of people which came from the larger Bosch, which went back into the larger Bosch. And through that also, we are now having that groundswell which exists to just carry it on and make sure that it is being applied where it should be applied. Not necessarily everywhere, but where it makes sense ultimately.
So in that context, I'd be curious about how you deal with the typical corporate antibodies, especially in the beginning when there's something new and people are maybe skeptical and a bit resistant of embracing that. How have you won over the different business units?
Yeah, it's actually a very nice term, Sebastian. I like that. Corporate antibodies. I never heard that before, but I think that describes it quite well. Because obviously, yes, an organization is a living organism. So your analogy is very apt and very correct. There are a lot of antibodies. There is a lot of momentum against it. Like I said before, change is hard. Change is not natural. And so the organism will naturally try to work against any kind of changes, any kind of new ideas, especially large organization. That is a tendency, right? That's normal. And so I guess two things were very important. What I mentioned before, there was from the beginning, very, very strong support and a very single-mindedness by our CEO that he saw that this is going to be important, right? So he was driving that personally from the top. Bosch Software Innovations as an entity actually at the time reported directly to him. And that was very intentional. That was very distinct in terms of the setup. That was not the normal setup, so to say. Within Bosch, you have the big business divisions and normally you're part of one of these. We were outside of that organizationally, but also as an entity. So we were incorporated as a separate legal entity. We were not part of, so to say, Bosch GmbH. We were intentionally established through actually a couple of acquisitions also where we brought in external talent, external ideas and technology with that too. We were created as a separate entity which was able to also experiment better than doing that within the existing corporate envelope. And so that was that idea of having a little speedboat, I think it's sometimes called, which can move maybe a little bit differently in different ways, different waterways and different ideas and more quickly also. And then over time, step by step, bringing that back into the bigger entity. And now we are, since a couple of years, working much closer again within the corporate envelope of Bosch. So it was step by step more tightly integrated again. We are now part of the area of Mr. Bolle. He's the CDO and CTO for Bosch. And so there's now a separate board area which is driving that. And so that was probably very critical. There's were two critical aspects. Support from the top, very, very strong and very direct. And on the other side, having the ability to do things a little bit differently also, at least in the beginning. And then over time, tightening it more closer again with the bigger ship, so to say, the mothership. And there was being able to change the direction also step by step and gradually, right? This you cannot do overnight. You have to accept that that kind of change will take a long time. And I think it was also good that Bosch did not throw billions of dollars at it actually in the beginning and try to make it a massive undertaking like some other companies did. And then they found out it's not sustainable actually, right? Whereas Bosch went about it much more gradually and built it step by step, smaller, more incrementally, but there was more sustainable and not so exposed also in the beginning when we didn't know necessarily what the outcomes would be to these huge expectations like some other companies created, where they put out numbers in the billions out there, what they want to generate in revenue. And very often you find, obviously, new technologies take a lot longer to take hold than you expect, right? You have this Gartner hype cycle, for example, right? We all have seen that. There are these hype cycles in technology, right? Everybody has been talking about for IoT for the longest time. The scaling takes time. We are going through a valley of tears also when we all realize that maybe it doesn't go as quickly as we wanted to, right? And that's normal. That happens with more or less every technology. And so there it's good to be more consistent, more sustainable, longer term oriented. And there obviously also the setup, I have to admit, of Bosch helps greatly. Bosch is a completely private company and we are supported by a very strong organizational foundation in the back, which allows us to look at things a little bit more long term. And I think that really paid off in this area.
So in this spirit of looking at things long term and also the last 10 years that you've seen of development now in this area, where do you see things heading in the next 10 years? What are the major trends that are playing out and what excites you?
Right. Well, if you look at where we are with IoT, in some areas, it's quite natural now. It's happening, right? We have a lot of devices which are now naturally connected in one way or the other. We have them all around our households. That will increase step by step. As I mentioned, for cars, they are connected and all these kind of things. So I think that that's a given. That will happen, right? Now we are looking at new areas, for example, completely connected smart buildings, where we are tying a lot of technologies there together. That's a big area for us right now. That is where we see the biggest growth in the next couple of years. We also still believe that in agriculture, there's a lot of improvement potential. It might take a little bit longer. We are not quite at that inflection point, I guess, in this area, but it will get there, right? Because there are very obvious benefits, even if maybe the adoption is not as strong yet as it could be. So these are two areas specifically which we are working in, where I see, where we are very excited about, and where we see probably connectivity on a very large scale going to take a hold more comprehensively in the next couple of years, is in what we would term autonomous driving, right? For autonomous driving, you need very extensive connectivity between the infrastructure out there, between all the assets which are monitoring the roads, for example, whether that might be cameras, other sensors, etc., and the vehicle itself and the cloud, right? This will need to be very tightly intertwined and connected in order to work. And so I think we'll see a huge amount of innovation in that area specifically. Healthcare is another area, right? And I think the current situation which we are all going through is actually fostering innovation also. We see a lot of interesting use cases we are currently working on to monitor, for example, very simple things, social distancing, right? You can monitor these kind of things using cameras, sensors, etc. So that could be done. And I think in some areas, it's starting to be applied. You can, for example, do that in hospitals. You can monitor assets in hospitals much better. You can make them much more productive and so on. So there's a lot of stuff actually happening in that area too. And you would be surprised how heterogeneous hospitals are these days, right? They're all working very differently from hospital to hospital there, potentially, as we are finding out, talking to the stakeholders there. And I think also there is an area where we probably will see, driven by actual issues again, right? Actual problems. We see a lot of innovation happening there right now.
Right. That's a super interesting outlook. Thomas, thanks so much for taking us along the journey of Bosch.io. Super interesting insights. And thanks again.
You're welcome, Christine. Looking forward to see you soon. Maybe even face to face, actually, at some point in time when we are all through this.
Yes.
But in the meantime, take care, stay safe, and stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Lost in Transformation with our host Sebastian from Ming Labs. If you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe to our channel and leave us a review on iTunes. Join us next time for another episode of our podcast.